It's Levi Brackman here with Truths, Jewish Wisdom for Today. Thank you so much for joining. Before we start, if you like this podcast, please like it or subscribe wherever you listen or watch this podcast. It allows other people to find it and gets the word down there. On to the podcast episode for today. Today in the Jewish calendar, we are celebrating the festival of Sukkot. Sukkot is a biblical festival according to the Torah. Sukkot is the festival of the ingathering of the produce after a whole season of harvest and bringing in the produce. Now the ingathering of the produce has been completed. It's in the storehouses, and this is a time to celebrate. And we celebrate it by sitting in huts in a sukkah, which is outside, and we also shake the four species, the Arba Minim, the Lulav, the Etrog, the Hadassim, and the Arava. Lulav is a palm branch, an Etrog is a citrus, Hadassim are myrtle, and Aravot are willow. So we take them together and we shake them on Sukkot. Now, what is all this about? Today, I'm going to give two perspectives, both vastly different from each other. One of them is found in Maimonides' Guide to the Perplexed. It's a rationalistic approach to Sukkot. And the other one is from the Kabbalah, from Rabbi Isaac Luria, Lurianic approach to Sukkot. Vastly different from each other. I'm going to give a quick overview of both. So first of all, with the rationalistic approach found in Maimonides' Guide for the Perplexed, section 3, chapter 43. He says that there's two festivals, Passover and the festival of Sukkot. The festival of Passover, we are celebrating the miracles that happened in Egypt, the plagues, and the exodus of Egypt overall. While the festival of Sukkot, the celebration is the miracles that took place in the desert, when the Israelites were in the desert, and they're there for 40 years, and they were wandering, and there was nothing to eat, nothing to drink. Manna was provided for them, and water was provided for them, and they were protected by the cloud of glory, etc., etc. That is a celebration that takes place on Sukkot. The reason why Sukkot is celebrated is because of the ingathering of all the crop that had been produced in the past season, and everything is complete, gathered in all the crop, it's all in the storehouses, and now is the time to celebrate. And he actually quotes Aristotle in the Ethics, where Aristotle says that a lot of the nations in this time of the year celebrate because of the ingathering of all of the crop. So this is also a good time to celebrate, according to Maimonides, because you're sitting outside in the sukkah, it's not too hot and it's not too cold, and in the land of Israel, where this originated, there wasn't a lot of rain during this period. He also says that this is to teach us something. All the mitzvot, according to Maimonides, is to inculcate within the person the correct beliefs and opinions. And this is to try and tell us that after a time of restriction, a time of difficulty, which was a time in the desert, and then you come to a time of plenty, you live in the land of Israel, you should never, during the time of plenty, forget the time when you didn't have anything. And you should always remember that and be thankful for the fact that now you have plenty. So you always have to be grateful to God for giving you so much. And that's really what you're supposed to reflect upon during Sukkot. Interestingly, he also notes that there are certain other explanations about Sukkot, and he says midrashic explanations, and some people think that that is a midrash found in Vayikra Rabbah. There, it basically says that Sukkot is a continuation of the repentance that takes place on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And Maimonides kind of says that that's really poetic license. It's not really what the festival is all about. That's the rationalistic approach to what Sukkot is. It's really a time of celebrating the fact that you've completed the harvest season and that all the crop is now gathered into the storehouses. You now have time, Maimonides says, to actually relax because your work is done. You can relax and be joyful and spend time with family and friends, etc. And you can be thankful to God for the plenty that you have and reflect on the miracles that happened in the time when you didn't have a lot, in the time of the desert. And then he goes on to talk about, you know, why we bring these, why we have these four fruit, why we bring them together. And he says basically that this is also a reminder of the fact that they were in the desert, they never had any fruit. Now they come to the land of Israel, land flowing with milk and honey, lots of fruit. So you take the most beautiful fruit together. And he goes on to explain why these four fruits are the most beautiful fruit. especially because these fruit have to last the whole 7 days. So these are the most beautiful types of fruit and vegetation that actually is able to last for 7 days. Other types of fruit might not last 7 days. It will dry up, it will go off, it will get rotten. So this is a type of beautiful fruit that can last for 7 days, and you bring it together to celebrate the fact that now you have fruit as well in this land of plenty. That's my Maimonidean rationalistic approach to the festival of Sukkot. Now, I'd love to jump into the Kabbalistic approach to the festival of Sukkot. To put this into perspective, we were talking about the Maimonidean approach and the Guide for the Perplexed that was written in 1190. And now we're going to talk about a book which was written in 1573 called the Eitz Chaim. It was written by Rabbi Chaim Vital, who lived from 1542 to 1620. And he was a student of Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Ari, who lived from 1534 to 1572. And in the book, he describes what is going on Sukkot. Now, to take a couple of steps back, in order to really understand what's going on in Sukkot in the minds of the Kabbalists, it's really important to explain what actually is going on Rosh Hashanah itself. So on Rosh Hashanah, that is the time when all things go back to how they were. So according to the Kabbalists, you have the Tree of Life, the Eitz Chaim, the Tree of Life, and you have these 10 Sefirot, the three intellects and the emotions, and then Malchut, which is the feminine, which is also called Shekhinah. We've discussed this before, and we'll get into it in much greater depth later on. And what is supposed to happen is there's supposed to be some kind of yichud or zivug, a cohabitation of the masculine with the feminine, and then that creates a further on the next level, if you like. So what happens in Rosh Hashanah is that you have the masculine and the feminine are no longer engaged face to face, so to speak. They're now back to back. And the idea here is that when they're face to face, you have the kindness, the chasadim, the energies of kindness come down, and then there is this zivug, cohabitation of the masculine and the feminine. When they are back to back, now the relationship is only one of gvura, only one of stringency, and there's no kindness whatever. And therefore, now they're back to back, and there can't be any real intimate cohabitation between the masculine and the feminine energies. So on Rosh Hashanah, you now have a situation where the masculine and the feminine energies are now back to back. They're not facing each other. And the job of the Kabbalists, the job of the Jews in their work throughout the month of Tishrei is to recalibrate this so that the masculine and the feminine are now face to face and they're cohabiting, and that they are creating energies that can be drawn down into the next level. And those energies, the energies of kindness, can then feed the next levels, and that the world can then go back to the way it's supposed to, and it could operate properly. If you have the masculine and the feminine energies back to back and they're not interacting properly, then you end up with all these negative energies and the world doesn't operate properly. So the work of the Kabbalists, the theurgy which they are engaged in, theurgy meaning the influence that they're supposed to have on the Godhead, that is the work they engage in the month of Tishrei. So fascinating ideas that we have here, that they're trying to achieve these cosmic unifications between the divine masculine and the divine feminine energies so that the world can operate. Now, that happens in different stages from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur until you come to Sukkot. Now, when you come to Sukkot, you have the Sukkah. And when the Kabbalist walks into the Sukkah, what is he trying to do? Well, in the Sukkah, you have this energy, which is considered to be like a surround energy. There are two types of energies. If you like, there's a kind of energy of chibuk, of hugging, of embrace. And then there's a kind of energy which is a more intimate energy. So there's energy which is sovev, which surrounds. And then there's the energy which memale, which fills, which is pnimi, which goes in the inner. And those two energies are separate from the other, but they also interact with each other. So the energy which is surrounding in the sukkah is energy of kindness, which surrounds in the sukkah. And the idea is you want to take that energy and encourage it in the sukkah. So that when a Kabbalist walks into the sukkah, he is engaging and bringing down this divine energy of kindness from the feminine and therefore engaging with it so that it can start to make its way down into the lower realms. So that is the idea of the sukkah. Now, what is the idea of the four types? The lulav, the palm branch, the etrog, the citrus, the hadas, which is the myrtle, and the arava, which is the willow. According to the Kabbalists, that represents a number of the sefirot in the masculine. So if you remember, there's two things. There's the masculine, which is considered to be zer anpin, and then there's the feminine, which is the malchut. According to the Kabbalists, they represent the following. You have the lulav, and the lulav represents the yisod, the foundation. The hadas, and there are three hadasim, and they represent chesed, gevurah, and tiferet. Kindness, stringency, and tiferet, which is beauty. And then the two aravot, because you have the lulav, and it's surrounded by three hadasim, and two aravot, and then they're bound together, and then you have the lulav. So the aravot, they are netzach and hod, which is victory and splendor. And then the etrog, which is the citrus fruit, that is malchut, which is the feminine. But according to Rabbi Isaac Luria, this isn't the feminine itself. Rather, it's the feminine part of the masculine. So there are two parts to the feminine. There's the feminine aspect in the masculine, and then there's the feminine itself. Now, if you think about this in terms of a person, because a lot of this is also represented in how a person is, you have the intellects, right? You have the crown, which is the keter, which is the top. And then you have the intellects, which is chachma, bina, and sometimes da'at. So you have wisdom, understanding, and then knowledge. And then you have the emotions, which is represented by these four types. Again, the hadasim are the chesed, gevurah, and tiferet. The aravot are the netzach and hod. And then the lulav is the yisod. And malchut, which is the feminine, is the etrog. That's, though, the feminine within the masculine. So let's try and understand what this is. So it's like the heart and then the genitalia area, which is considered to be the lulav. And then within that, you have the etrog itself is considered to be the atara, the feminine of the yisod. And that's the atara, the crown of the yisod. You can consider that. I'm not going to explicitly state it, but in the genitalia, if you like, you have the lulav part, and then you have the atara, the crown part of the genitalia, which is considered to be the feminine of the masculine. Now, of course, this doesn't necessarily directly represent the physical body, and it's all talking about spiritual realms and in a mystical sense, but you can understand it as it works, if you like, in the physical body. So you've got the torso, which is considered to be the emotions, and then you have the genitalia area, which is considered to be the yisod and the malchut. There we go. So you take them together and you shake them. And it's really interesting because if you look at the halachot, the laws with regard to shaking the lulav and etrog, these four species, when you shake them, so there's different opinions. And the Kabbalist, Rabbi Isaac Luria, has his own opinion with how they should be shaken. So if you go into regular synagogues, whether the Ashkenazi or Sephardic synagogues, you will see that people are shaking the lulav and etrog. And the way they shake it is they usually take the lulav and etrog and they shake it into different directions. They point in different directions and they shake it up, down. And then when they put it downwards, they actually will take the lulav and etrog and they will turn it so that the head of the lulav is actually facing towards the ground. So they'll shake it that way. And if you go to a more Kabbalistic type synagogue, Chabad, for example, they actually do it in a Kabbalistic way, according to what Rabbi Chaim Vital says from his teacher, Rabbi Isaac Luria. What they will do is they will take the lulav and etrog and they won't shake it necessarily. They'll just move it in different directions. So if it's going up, they'll move it from, they'll start in their chest area and they'll move it forward and then go up. If it's going to the right, they'll go take it back to the chest area and go to the right. I'll take it to the chest area and go to the left. And that's the way they will do it. And then when they go to downwards, they'll never turn it downwards. They'll just move it downwards. So if they go up, they'll move from the chest up. And if they go down, they move from the chest and down. But they'll never turn it downwards. And there's a reason for that, according to the Kabbalists, is because what you're doing here, according to, and this is very interesting, like ancient anatomy and physiology and biology, that the, according to them, the way procreation takes place and the way of reproducing our species takes place is that in the male, you have their brain, and their brain is made up of this white matter. And that white matter, according to them, makes its way down the spine into the scrotum. And then when the person then cohabits, they will impregnate the female with their sperm, which contains matter from the brain. Now, we know today that's not how it works, but that's how they thought it worked back then. And they have this whole way of thinking about it, that basically the white part of the human being is derived from the man, and the redder parts are derived from the women. And this is just how they thought about things back then. The idea of chromosomes didn't exist yet. So the idea here is then that the sperm comes from the brain, according to them, and then makes its way through the spine and through the torso down into the genitalia area, and then it can then impregnate the woman when they cohabit together. So what they're trying to do is, again, the whole enterprise from Rosh Hashanah till the end of Sukkot is in order to bring about the situation where there's a zivug, where the masculine and feminine are now face to face with each other, and it actually uses this language of embracing, of a chibuk, and the shika, and of kissing, and it uses this language of intimacy that should take place between the masculine and the feminine. And the idea is to bring it about where you have the masculine and the feminine, which are now cohabiting properly and normally, and the world is working normally. So what kind of theurgic actions are taking place with lulav and etrog? Well, what they're doing here is, according to the Kabbalists, is you're taking the four species, which represent the emotions of chesed, gvurah, tiferes, netzach, and hod, and then the yesod, which is, if you like, male genitalia, and then the malchut, which is the crown of the male genitalia, and you're taking it, and you're moving it upwards towards da'at, towards knowledge, and you're trying to get the chesed, the kindness which is in da'at, and bring it down through the chesed, gvurah, tiferes, netzach, hod, yesod, through the yesod, through the foundation, and into the malchut, into the atara, the crown of the masculine, which is the feminine of the masculine, so that it can then cohabit with actual malchut and bring that kindness down to actual malchut. So since the lulav is always going upwards towards da'at, you never want to turn it upside down. So as a matter of fact, when I was in the synagogue, I saw this. They were from the Crown Heights Beth Din, which are very obviously influenced by the Lurianic Kabbalah. And it says, Chas v'shalom, God forbid to turn the lulav around and move it towards the ground. Because if you're doing it that way, then you're now no longer in your theurgic actions drawing down this kindness from da'at and down through the emotions and into the yesod and out through the malchut and into the feminine. So you never want to turn it down. What's also really interesting is that the Kabbalist from Isaac Luria, through Rabbi Chaim Vital, says that a man and his wife should not cohabit on Simchat Torah. Now, all the rest of the month of Tishrei, they're allowed to cohabit. But they're not allowed to cohabit on Simchat Torah. Why? Because Simchat Torah is a pivotal moment. You're coming towards the end of this festival season. You've nearly achieved the cohabitation that is taking place between the masculine and the feminine in the normal way. But on Simchat Torah, he says the cohabitation is still taking place between Yisrael or Yaakov and Leah. Leah, remember, is the hated wife. The cohabitation hasn't yet taken place in the spiritual sense between Yaakov and Rachel yet. And that starts taking place, he says, on the Musaf prayer on Simchat Torah. But the night of Simchat Torah hasn't taken place yet, and therefore the Kabbalists shouldn't cohabit with their wives on the night of Simchat Torah, because the cohabitation is not yet fully there in the right way. So you wait until after Musaf on Simchat Torah. That is now that time that the Kabbalists can cohabit with their wives. And that's only Simchat Torah by night, not before, and we won't go into why. But it's really interesting the way the whole idea, the whole enterprise, according to the Kabbalists, of Rosh Hashanah till Simchat Torah is the idea of creating a situation where the masculine and feminine are now face to face and can, in a spiritual sense, cohabit properly, so that the world can now continue existing as it was prior. And this theurgy, it's not like you might think that it's begging God for forgiveness. According to the Kabbalists, this isn't about begging God for forgiveness. This is about making changes in the Godhead, which only humans can affect, so that the divine energy flows properly through the correct unifications and cohabitations that take place in the divine. Fascinating stuff. I thought I would just share this because this is the festival of Sukkot. I thought I would share how the Kabbalists see the festival of Sukkot very different than the rationalistic approach, which is described and presented by Maimonides. The two are so different. They actually, in some senses, seem to be two very different religions. One is very much based in the rationalistic approach, very much that which exists in our text of the Torah itself. And then you find this whole new thing in the Kabbalah, the secrets of the Torah, so to speak, which are not found in any kind of mention of it, seems divorced in many ways from the text itself, but fascinating nonetheless. And no doubt when the Kabbalists were engaged in this thought process and in this mindset, this is what they felt they were doing throughout the month of Tishrei. And someone who really lives this, it must be really, really exciting for them indeed to feel the theurgy, the impact that they're having on the divine, and the sense that they're actually impacting these changes in the spiritual cosmos, which have this tremendous impact down below in this world. It must be a very exciting time indeed for them. That leaves me to wish you an enjoyable rest of Sukkot and a meaningful rest of Sukkot and joy and festive Simchat Torah ahead. And until next time, this has been Levi Brackman with Truths, Jewish Wisdom for Today.